welcome to the ABCA's podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Brownlee. A unicorn in every sense of the word, Rawlings' new limited edition icon, electric Ucorn BB Corps bat's performance is fully charged and will leave the competition mystified. Its seamless two-piece carbon construction maximizes barrel size while maintaining optimal stiffness and increased trampoline. With a balanced swing weight and slight end load, the Unicorn is best for athletes seeking speed through the zone. Electrify your swing with the all-new Rawlings Icon Electric Unicorn Bat. Happy hitting. This episode is sponsored by Netting Pros. Netting professionals are improving programs one facility at a time. Netting Professionals specializes in the design, fabrication, and installation of custom netting for backstops, batting cages, dugouts, BP screens, and ball carts. They also design and install digital graphic wall padding, windscreen, turf protectors, dugout benches, dugout cubbies, and more. Netting Professionals is an official partner of the ABCA and continues to provide quality products and services to many high school, college, and professional fields, facilities, and stadiums throughout the country. Netting Professionals are improving programs one facility at a time. Contact them today at 844-620-2707 or info@nettingpros.com. Visit them online at www.nettingpros.com or check out Netting Pros on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn for all their latest products and projects. Make sure to let CEO Will Miner know that the ABCA sent you. Now on to the podcast. Vince Colby was honored with the 2024 ABCA Pacific Association Assistant Coach of the Year for his season at Palomar College. Colby helped the Comets to a 36-11 overall and 23-2 conference record in 2024. Colby is entering his fourth season working with the Palomar catching crew and coaching first base. Colby's role as first base coach and his expertise in developing the team's catchers have been crucial to the team's success over the past three seasons. Prior to Palomar, Colby coached hitters and outfielders at Moorpark College and also coached at Agoura High School. Colby played collegiately at Moorpark from 1999 to 2000, moved on to play at Bellevue University in Nebraska. Colby is also a successful entrepreneur owning multiple companies including EPR Recruiting, Crest Haven Financial, and Colby Ventures 1959. Let's welcome Vince Colby to the podcast. All right, here with Vince Colby, ABCA Pacific Association Assistant Coach of the Year, third year at Palomar, but have previous stops at Moorpark and then Agoura High School, correct?
Yep.
Congrats on the honor.
My man, it's pretty awesome. Pretty lucky. Surrounded by great people. So,
yeah, man.
I'm living the life right now in San Diego at Palomar with the coaching staff. So I'm pretty lucky. I'm real lucky.
Hey, what's Pro Fire Sourcing?
So I own a recruiting company, not in the baseball field, but in fire security, low voltage nationwide. And that's another division of what I've got. The business is EPR Recruiting and then Pro Fire Sourcing. So
yeah, I saw you had some other ventures that you ran on your bio. So how do you marry that with coaching?
The funny thing is when I coached at Moorpark College, you know, I had a $2,500 stipend, which wasn't a lot, but I was young and I could eat top ramen and not living the good life. But I had to actually step away from coaching for about 10 years and try to build a business and make my way to the point where I'm at now, where I get to enjoy coaching and I don't have to worry about it paying my bills or doing lessons and stuff like that. I always laugh with Ben, our head coach. I go, dude, you would be a hell of a business owner if you actually did it, because managing people and managing that amount of people is, that's a fairly large business, 50 to 60 employees on a day-to-day basis, and keeping people motivated. I think a lot of head coaches would be really good businessmen if they had the inclination to do it.
Yeah. I mean, they're CEOs now. The head coach is a CEO now.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially with all the moving parts, you know, the NIL, the money, the sponsorships, the camps, managing the people. I mean, dude, I, it, some guys don't get paid enough. Some guys are doing a hell of a job and not getting paid enough. I know a lot of coaches aren't getting paid enough. So,
It seems like a lot of guys that have gotten out once they get into the real world, because they're used to the work ethic piece in baseball, they kill it when they get out in the real world.
Yeah, it was funny. I wrote an article on LinkedIn, I think like 10 years ago, on why I hire athletes, Division I all the way to JUCO, and people seem to love it. And just simple, the same thing, work ethic, how they go about their business, what's, you know, and dealing with failure. Failure is the biggest one, especially in sales. A lot of baseball guys are good at sales because they can understand that, you know, you're kind of working the process rather than the result, and good things will happen over time. So
same thing with recruiting. You get told no a lot. So, I mean, how'd you fall into that part with the recruiting piece? So what businesses are you recruiting for?
Okay. So, fire security, low voltage. So guys are doing like card access, you know what I mean? Access control, fire alarm, fire suppression, and then like specialty stuff like Halon 250, which are like airplane hangers and stuff like that. So, years ago, I owned a print company where I did like car wraps. I was the car wrapping guy in LA along with like 7,000 other people. And, a buddy of mine goes, "Hey man, I think you'd be really good at this because you talk well and you know," and so I went to do it, and, I worked for a really shady guy and he didn't pay me. And then, one of my former players, who ended up being a rather large, businessman owning a lot of large companies, goes, "Hey man, do you want to try to do this with me? I'll pay and we'll build it." And so we started in 2015, and now we got like 42 employees day to day and rocking. So it's a good little deal.
At what point then did you feel like, okay, I've got that in line and now I can get back into coaching baseball?
I sold my interest in the business about 6 months before COVID, and I moved to San Diego with my wife, and then I was like, it's actually pretty funny. So like I sent my resume everywhere in San Diego to every JUCO, and I'm like, "Hey man, I'm free. You know, like, here's my references, Bill Pintar, the Forester, so on and so forth." Nobody called me until my contractor knew Jason Smizer, who's the field guy and the infield coach at Palomar College. And he goes, "Hey man, I think you guys played against each other." He was on the San Diego Waves. I played on the Foresters like years, like forever ago, you know? And he goes, you guys should go play golf." So we went and played golf. And then Jay's like, "Dude, you're coming to coach." And so I talked with Ben, and then I started coaching at Palomar. It was rad.
Did you play for Mike Evans at Bellevue?
I did. Yes.
How was that?
He's a good guy. He's a good guy. Yeah. It was a little culture shock for me in Nebraska, going to Nebraska from SoCal, because I didn't get my grades, but, he's a good guy. He won. He's a good guy.
And I was going to ask you that too, because obviously way different climate going from where you're from to out there to play in a spring. Was that the first time you'd ever had to play in cold weather?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Like, and getting the field ready and then practicing, and like leaving at like 5 to go to I think it was like a driving range at like 4 a.m. And you're just doing, I'm looking at my buddy like, hey, you went here. And I'm like, "Hey, you should come with me." And I'm like, "Oh, dude, man." But, you know, it was fun. It was good. We won. You know what I mean? It was a little bit, it was funny because there's a lot more thinking on his end on like, double fake squeeze and fake slash drag. And I'm just like, wow. All right. And then, you know, cause I played California JUCO at Moore Park, and that's like gorilla ball during the timeline that I was there. So yeah.
Yeah. My boss that I worked for at Iowa was at Creighton forever. So running that Omaha circle of coaches. So I know a lot about those coaches in that area. You skipped over a lot of schools to go to a 4-year school from Moore Park. Did you have any other options?
I did, but I didn't get my grades, You know what I mean? So I'm like the perfect story for guys, because I could have gone anywhere. Long Beach State, Miami wanted me, and then I sent the transcripts, and they just laughed. They're like, "All right, talk to you later, dude. Later, bro." And so I played for the Foresters for Bill, and who was it? It was Mike Evans' assistant. He was a scout for the Diamondbacks, and he came up to me when we were in the NBC World Series and was like, "Hey, where are you going?" And I'm like, "I got nowhere." So he's like, "Well, why don't you come here?" And I'm like, "All right, let's do it." So that's where we ended up.
Yeah, that's a throwback story, because it doesn't happen too often like that anymore, where guys are sitting around that late.
Yeah, well, I mean, but I had no other option. You know what I mean? I could have gone, you know, whatever, you know, NAIA D3 that would have let me in with my, you know, my terrible grades. So, yeah. So
have you had a chance to reflect on the season?
On the last season that we had? Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think what happened during the season.
Yeah. I mean, I know you guys lost to Santa Ana in the regional.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the season to me last year was pretty like poignant, because, my wife passed away in October of cancer. And so, took me a little bit of time, to, like, work my way back. I was kind of like dipping my toe out there on the field. And then once she passed away, about 2 weeks afterwards, I came back out and, you know, started working with the kids and just had a blast. And losing to Santa Ana is kind of bittersweet, because, you know, we seem to go back and forth in the years past. We beat them, I think, 2 years before, and they beat us. And then, you know, I just come up short just a little bit, just a hair, one knock, and we got it the last game, you know. But overall, I mean, the season that we had the last 3 years are just, I mean, I can't believe I'm this lucky. You know what I mean? To be around the staff and win as much as we do and have the quality kids, you know, I got no complaints. You know what I mean? And I want Santa Ana. I want them again this year, if we can get there, and then see what we can do. So it'll be fun.
With what you were going through, is being at the field a release for you?
Yeah. I mean, I think everybody that's in baseball, you know, like, if you surround yourself with good people, good mentors, it was the best thing ever. And even being around the kids that knew what was going on, that had met my wife and, you know, like, knew me. And, like, you know, I came back and, one of our starting catchers just came over and gave me a hug, and he almost broke me. I almost started crying right there, 'cause I couldn't help myself. And, but, like, just, you know, like, little stuff like that, you know what I mean? Just little appreciation from the players for what you do and how you do it and showing up and helping out. I mean, that was huge, man. It was huge.
What are some other things you've learned from Ben about running a program?
That he's organized. He's got a plan. He's got a plan that's a little bit further down the road. So everything is about process and getting to the point of execution at a later date, right? So, I mean, watching him manage a game, how he utilizes a little bit of the psychology on how to motivate certain players, how to bring down the temperature with others. I think that's a masterclass. And that's, you know, I think some of the best people that you've ever been around, you can watch that. They know somebody's temperament. They know how to get under their skin, take it back, add a little bit, you know. And I think that's what I've learned the most, is watching him deal and then be able to make an impact in a small moment that will reap rewards at a later date. You know what I mean?
Your main responsibility working with the catchers?
Yes. Yep.
What do you think? Yeah, I mean, how much freedom are you giving those guys on some of the new stuff that's out there?
I mean, it depends on skill level. Let's put it that way. The guys that can do it, I just let them go. You know, because they haven't proved me wrong, but they proved me right. Like, hey, You're good enough to do this. We work on it every single day. We have individuals for about 45 minutes every day. So we're working on, you know, snatching the low strike, right knee down in the primary, and going from there. Some guys, we need to minimize what they're trying to do because they don't have that ability to necessarily do it. And we need to work on it in order to get them to where they can, but it's going to take some time. Some guys just have the gift and you're just like, dude, go. You know, we had McConnell Lasso last year, who's at Hawaii. And basically he taught me, I sat back and I go, hey dude, whatever you want to do, I'm good, man. You just tell me the program and we're good. And, I got that same guy in, Hunter Stenzel, a guy he got injured last year. And so he's here for the third year, but like him and Carter Jerson, those guys, like I just sit back and I go, hey, what do you guys want to work on today? And then my other guys, I'll try to refine it and we'll try to have a baseline of what we do every single day. But
are those guys comfortable with giving target and then their gloves going to the ground and bringing the ball back into the zone, or how are their receiving styles?
Yeah. I mean, we work on that every single day. We got the keyhole, which is one of the best. We got the Manta Ray. We got all the tools and like setting up and target. I think the hardest part right now is trying to set up for target with the timeline that we have in order to get it done, to get the sign down, so on and so forth. Cause we haven't gone to the automated system with, you know, the watches and stuff like that. We're still giving, you know, we got a, you know, Apple AirPod in one ear and giving the information. But yeah, I mean, they're super comfortable, and these guys work on it every single day. So it's fun to watch.
Do you think that's been the biggest adjustment for the West Coast schools is trying to get things in quicker?
I think for sure. Yeah. Because now even the JC, I think this year we actually have a clock, which is going to be interesting to see how that works and how fast it's really going to be. Because I think in the years past, I think our umpires kind of gave us a little leeway here and there. And now it's, you know, now we got the shot clock. So it'll be fun.
Do you guys ever let your catchers run the game then? Speed things up?
No. Our pitching coach is always giving the signs and going from there. I'm sure he has some shorthand as far as what he's doing with the signs in order to get something in, because he'll be on the clock as well. But, I wish it was that way, but like, you know, you've been in this game a long time. I remember, you know, that was the goal of a catcher back in the day in college. If the head coach trusted you to call the game because you knew what you're doing, you knew what the game plan was. And that was kind of like, an honor to be able to get there.
Yeah.
And be able to do that.
Earn that right. Yep. It's also harder at a two-year school too. Cause you're working on so many other things with them that taking that off their plate sometimes is easier for guys.
Yeah. Yeah. And like having those discussions and the time that actually it takes to develop something like that, you know, but I think, is there any D1 that just trusts their catcher to call the game at this point?
No.
Probably not. No. Right, with all the analytics,
no,
you know what I mean.
With the amount of information that's out there, it's almost impossible. I completely understand the pro level, but they're at the field a lot longer than what the college mm-hmm. games are.
Yep.
It's so hard to do. So the first place you're starting with the catchers when you get them, you know, when school starts for you all, where's the first place you're starting with the catchers when you get them?
As far as like setting up, how to set up, where to get out, probably a little bit of body positioning. Some guys are real tall, some guys, you know, press their chest a little bit. So I think for me, like that's where we start, and then we go from there. I think the biggest thing is we work a lot on, you know, catch play, throwing a second. I think that's real important, especially with the pitching staff that we've got. You know, not allowing teams to run on us is a huge deal. And then, obviously, you know, the first day in, probably Jaeger bands and a little weighted balls to just have a program to go to get bigger and better, you know, and then go from there.
What weighted ball exercises are you having them do?
Let's see. It's, pitching play, drive line.
Yeah.
So we got the drive line balls in the, I think the 9, 12 and 15, and then they'll do some overload and underload with with our weighted ball wall that we have. And they'll kind of just go from there on a day-to-day basis.
How strict are you them with long toss?
It's hard because we run pretty fast and things can happen. I try to allow them at least two or three times a week to just go, where I don't have them have to go in the bullpen right away and start catching pens and stuff like that. But it's not a must. I'll try to tell a guy like, hey, dude, it's probably, you need to stretch out, you know what I mean? Get a little bit stronger, do some pull downs. I mean, the information's there. I think you probably got to see it. I mean, how old are you?
50.
50? I'm 47. So Jaeger bands, and then with his yoga and all the stuff back in the day with pull downs, and you can see a big result. It's pretty cool. All the information that's out here now.
How are you mixing guys in with bullpens then to save on their legs with your catcher? How many catchers are you guys carrying?
Right now I got 5. I wish, you know, there's some guys I'm like, man, I wish I could, you know, redshirt them, but you know, injuries happen. Guys have to come in and you got to use them. But yeah, 5 guys. The problem is I don't have to really manage anything. The only thing I got to manage is my 2 starters want to catch every pen because they're gluttons. You know what I mean? And I'm just like, dude, I go, hey, like, let's take, you know, hey, why don't you take a break? No. This guy's got good stuff, coach. I want to get in there. I'm like, all right, dude. Like instead of managing, what I think I did is I bought a set of Normatec boots and I just let them use the Normatec and just like, hey, dude, you're going to do whatever you're going to do. Get after it. And then hopefully you guys can repair your body. We just got a cold plunge out there. So if they want a cold plunge out at the field, they can do that. And I mean, we'll go from there.
I love the Normatec.
Mm-hmm.
It saved our catchers.
Saved them. Yeah.
And I think there's a lot of theory too with catchers because they are more like long distance runners to using the cold plunge more just for to save their legs for sure.
Yeah. Anything you can do to get rid of any inflammation within the body, especially in those joints. But it's funny, like, you know, a 20-year-old kid, your 20-year-old knees catching every day, dude, you feel good. I mean, you got springs in your legs, you know, but you'll see it. You'll see it around game 20. Coach, you know what I mean? We're playing 3 times a week and this is going, you know, all right, come on, let's do some PT and get you going, man. It'd be good.
Then how often do you have them throw during the spring, then pregame? How are you rotating guys in? Who warms the pitcher up? Who catches in and out? Who throws in and out? How are you rotating guys in for that?
So my starters are usually in the pen and they're catching, they're warming up. Our starter, and then I'll have my 2 or 3 guys out on the field doing in and out, and then that's really it. My starter's usually in the pen that day, working on their own program, flexibility, stretching, doing whatever they need to do, because at this point I can trust them. And then just doing in and out with my other 3 guys.
Guys have a hard time getting ready. You guys start playing early in the spring. Guys have a hard time getting ready, or is it just right because they're California kids and they're used to it?
Well, the weather, it kind of helps, you know what I mean? Because right around the time, it's going to be nice and warm. We're going to get going. They have no issue. My catchers don't, you know what I mean? At least, like, it used to be back in the day in high school, what I used to make guys do, because they'd come out just flat. And it, not at the college level, because guys are better, but at the high school level, I'd make them run 4 laps around the field, just getting fired up before the game, just loose and lathered. You know, I try to tell them, like, you know, I'm not in shape at all anymore, but like that was a process back in the day where like you took it upon yourself to go get loose and do your plyos and do everything before the game. And it was almost like a badge of honor back in the day. At least when we played, like, you'd see guys out there doing their own wind sprints and their own stretching program before, what, you know, listening to Ken Revisa on a Walkman, you know what I mean, before the game or whatever it is. And then, but now, like, kids have, you know, their static stretching and the whole thing that they go through, and some of them feel like it's good enough. Other guys don't. And if it's a no, if they don't feel good enough, then I'll do the classic, like, we'll do hamstring stretches, you know, and we'll do the static stretching where I push, pull a little bit and just kind of open them up.
It's called PNF stretching.
PNF?
You don't see it as much anymore, but I swear that's why we didn't get hurt back in the days because we did a lot of PNF stretching.
Yeah, PNF stretching. When I was at Moorpark, we started doing PNF stretching, and I don't think we significantly less pulled hamstrings throughout the year with that. And I don't see it done as much as far as like partners, you know what I mean, with, you know, butterfly or, you know, like whatever it is. But yeah.
What'd you take from the high school side to what you're doing now?
That's a tough question. I can tell you what I took. I don't want to be a head coach. That's it, man. Being the assistant, high school level, like, yeah, I mean, I think you can imagine what Southern California, fairly well-off area, high school is and what it is, the animal it is itself. And I had a couple of opportunities, and I'm like, nope, I'm good, man. I'll be the assistant. I'll be able to, you know, I don't want to deal with any of that. But no matter what, I mean, like coaching at any level, the kids are awesome. They haven't changed. I don't think we've changed. I think the game's changed a little bit as far as like the celebrations and what kids want to do and show off and do stuff like that. But I don't know.
How much are you guys communicating with parents?
Zero. Other than, hey, how you doing?
Interesting to me. It is so interesting to me how every program is different with that. Some have a lot of involvement, and then some it's like hardly any at all. Which I think it's awesome because, again, like every program is completely different and find what works for you.
Yeah, I think when I say zero, I'm talking about if a mom and dad want to talk to Ben or us about playing time, that's off limits. Like your son's a man, he's 18 years old, he can come and talk about it. As far as like, hey, how you doing? Good to see you. You know what I mean? No problem with that. Like, hey, you know, let me hop on the barbecue and let's have a barbecue with the parents after the game. Let's do that. But, you know, the nitty gritty, the decision making and the game of baseball, that's on them. You know what I mean? And that's kind of a nice position to be in at any level. If you could do it, it doesn't happen at the high school level anymore.
No, not at all.
No, no.
What are you sending guys home with over winter break as far as what to work on? And when you communicating that with them, like roles or maybe what they need to improve on for the spring?
Let's see. With the catchers, they'll have a program that they can come out and do every day. We're not limited as far as what the D1s are as far as time at the JC level. So I live close. So if they need to work, like, hey, I'll come out and help you out. But I think the biggest thing is, you know, some guys, you know, I always tell everybody before the season, do yoga, because all the bulk that you put on in the weight room up into this point, if you can stretch, so you're just not tight walking into the season and then trying to play catch up to get loose enough and play free and easy. So I think that's one big thing. And then, you know, I mean, that's pretty much it.
You stay with yoga during the spring?
Yeah, our outfielder coach has a kinesiology degree, so he runs the weights at 11 every single day, and then he'll do yoga 2 to 3 times a week. But also, like, hey, if we play, you know, back to back 2 days, it might just be a yoga day. You know what I mean? And trying to loosen up and relax.
I completely agree. We did it.
Yep,
we did. We tried to do 2 to 3 days a week. And same mm-hmm. thing with hamstrings, lower backs. I think it eliminates a lot of the issues that they have in season.
Yep. Yeah.
What would you like to see out of catchers that you're not seeing right now before they get to you?
blocking. Blocking and understanding what it is and you know, a lot of guys come, you know, we're lucky Southern California. Most of the guys that come to us, they, you know, they've got a catching coach, and most of the places where we recruit, you know, some of these guys won't have a catching coach. They'll come and we're going to try to play catch up and then, try to figure out how to do it, how to, anticipate it, what to think about, how to buy in. And then, you know, I think that would be the basics for everything. That's one of the hardest things to do, when to do it, how to do it, when to try to backpick a ball. Blocking.
How often are you guys blocking?
Probably once or twice a week. That's about it. I will go and watch hens, and I'll put the onus on the guys like, hey, I need you to block in the pens. I need you to buy in here. I need you to work here. And so just me being around watching them, you know, and trying to block in that situation, because, you know, we, you know, during the fall, we got 80 guys out there, probably 45 of them are pitchers, and, you know, maybe 5 or, you know, maybe 10 can hit the zone consistently. Other guys are all over the place. So just working on that and then bringing it to the game and then kind of going from there. And then maybe watching a little video. We got the, what system? We got Pixalot. So they can go online and watch themselves and see the mistakes that they made. And we'll kind of go over that and just make slight adjustments here or there.
That's really the only time you really can work on it is pen and games. Honestly, you can do all the blocking drills you want, but you still have to be able to do it off a live ball, off a pitcher.
Yeah. That's like, I'm trying to like, we'll set up the hack attack. And, I try to make it variable in the zone, out of the zone, but they know, they can see it move. And I'm just like, this is not even like, I go like, you know what I mean? It's almost like I got to put something in front of it so they can't see it move up or down or whatever it is. But in the pens and then kind of going from there, and then them to buy into that mentality and then watch it come along. It's pretty rad. You know what I mean? And then, at every program, you got some guys that are good that kind of pass it on to the next guy and willing to talk to him about it. I think that's the best thing that we've had at Palomar, because we've never just lost every single guy that's been behind the dish. It's always one guy was a freshman, one guy was a sophomore, he's out, all right, sophomore, freshman, and then just kind of buying into the program and what and who they are.
You guys are in a huge area for instructors. So how much communications, and you mentioned it, everybody's got their kind of own instructors. How much communicating are you guys doing with the private instructors?
Zero. It's a weird deal where I'll have a conversation with a kid if I think what the instructor is teaching is not correct. But I haven't had that situation. I mean, the guys that we've had have been pretty darn good. So the instructors, I don't even know their name. Good job, guys. You're doing an awesome job. I appreciate you, but there's not much.
Do you have a fail forward moment? Something you thought it was going to set you back, but looking back now helped you move forward? Could be baseball, could be personal, could be anything.
Yeah. I'll tell you, when I was coaching at Moorpark College, I was a young guy. I thought I knew what everything was and who, and I had an ego, you know what I mean? And it ended up costing me my job with working with Mario Porto, who's an awesome guy. He was my assistant coach when I played at Moorpark. Amazing human being, great dude. And I lost it in a playoff game. We were playing Riverside, who ended up winning the Final Four that year. And he made a call that I didn't like, and I chirped from the dugout. And this is the man that I care about. And, hey, man, the best dude ever. And he had to let me go because, he's like, hey, you know what I mean? I can't have you doing that. And I go, yep, you got it. So every place that I've gone forward, I've had to think. And, for young coaches, like, yeah, you want to be – You can go wherever you want. But I think the biggest point is it's somebody's program. They put the time, energy, and effort into it. And if you're going to be there, only add, don't subtract. So I think that's the biggest thing is that all I'm trying to do is add every single day to the crew that I'm with and be, just not take or not affect someone's life. All I want to do is add. I want to bring, whatever I can to the table and not take anything away, because I'm an assistant coach. I don't get paid anything to be at Palomar. Ben and our other coaches are paid. You know what I mean? That's their living. I can't affect them in that way by doing something dumb along the way, I hope.
Yeah, but you still have reactions to things. How are you able to kind of take that pause before you react?
I think now I'm just 47. I'm just too tired. You know what I mean? I don't sleep good. I don't sleep 8 hours a night. I'm up at 4 a.m. every day. And I think it's just reps, right? It's the same thing. Coaching reps. You see stuff. You see an umpire blow a call. You see some weird stuff. And then how are you going to react to it? You know, and you're not 20 years old anymore. And this isn't, you know, like life or death. At least at my level, you know what I mean? Cause I'm not getting fired if we lose, you know what I mean? But, I think, yeah, just go from there.
Have you always been an early morning person?
No. But once you start working a real job and starting, you know, like, when we started our business, EPR Recruiting, we dealt with New York, which means we started at 4 to start at 7. And then that just became the thing. And then now I couldn't sleep it. My sleep in is like 6:30. I'm lucky if I can get through that.
I think anybody can train themselves to do it, because I'm an early riser now, but I was not. And I think anybody can train themselves to do it. It's just like any other habit. I think you can develop that habit. And a lot of my friends that work on the West Coast, they're up at that time because of the East Coast time change.
Yeah. And I think the funny thing is, like, I actually hired my players when we first started the business, my ex-players, and I go, hey man, you're gonna get here like 4:30 or 4 a.m and they're like, dude, what? And I go trust me, I go, you're done by 2:33, you got the rest of the day, you can go, you know, do. And then slowly but surely, after about like 6 months, they're like, okay, all right, this is not bad, you know what I mean? Because most jobs, you got to deal with traffic, especially in California where my business is at. Going home at 5 o'clock at night is just, it's not fun. Not fun.
And you're a good spot, Delmar, right? You live in Delmar?
Yeah. Yeah. Not bad at all. You know what I mean? Right on the beach, close to the freeways, and, you know, just, you know.
The track's right there, too.
Yeah. We got the track. The track's not a bad place.
I was with my dad and brother 4 years ago out there.
Uh-huh.
It's like a palace.
Did you go to Brigantine pregame a little bit?
No. Yeah. Good. What are some final thoughts before I let you go?
Well, one of the things I want to definitely say is, I was thinking about it. I wanted to say a thank you to Ben, obviously, for hiring me and let me be a part of what's going on. I want to thank Ken Wagner, who's my my college coach at Moorpark College, the best human being, and pretty much my goal as a human being is to be like him, and I fall short every single day. He's an amazing human being. Obviously, Mario Porto at Moorpark College now, he's the head coach, and Bill Pintard for being rad. Just a good dude, man. Just a fun guy to be around, to play ball back in the day. I have some of the best memories. And also, you know, him doing the thing with Hugs for Cubs, going to the Children's Hospital was impactful. And yeah, obviously, you know, come full circle, and my wife passes away, and you know, a lot of the coaches and a lot of the family and friends donated to Ross Wonders, which is, she had a special form of cancer, genetic mutation. So I want to, you know, thank anybody that donated to that and help them out for the research. And other than that, man, yeah.
Anybody that wants to dive into that form of cancer and maybe help out a little bit, where can they find to help out?
So you can go to the website. It's Ross Wonders. It's ROS1DERS, and it's basically a genetic mutation. My wife, it mutated on her before we knew it. She had stage 4 lung cancer, and you know, we had a good 2 years where we got to travel and do as much as we could and try to have as much fun. So if somebody wants to look at that and help out, that would be amazing. And you know, if you ever see me, I'd love to give you a hug and say thank you.
Yeah, appreciate you, sir. Thanks for time, Vince.
All right, Ryan, take it easy, brother.
Congrats again to Coach Colby and to all of our assistant coaches of the year. With some of the other convention program we had, I had to push this release to now, but wanted to make sure Coach Colby got his recognition. I look forward to award season every year. Be here before you know it. I know everyone is right in the middle of their seasons right now and want to wish you all the best of luck. Thanks again to John Litchfield, Zach Hale, and Matt West in the ABC office for all the help on the podcast. Feel free to reach out to me via email at rbrownlee@abca.org, Twitter, Instagram, or TikTok, CoachB_ABCA, or direct message me via the MyABCA app. This is Ryan Brownlee signing off for the American Baseball Coaches Association. thanks and leave it better for those behind you.